get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Kerry Campion. Now, Kerry is an SEO copywriter, and we dive into a few different topics around content and even social media as well. So first we cover topics around content writing or SEO content writing versus copywriting, how they can kind of be used together or interchangeably, her content creating process. We also dive into her content pillar strategies, things like creating content for links, creating content for social. That was quite an interesting one, how she repurposes her content to do well on platforms like Twitter. And we dive into some of the SEO content strategies she uses and also her buyer intent strategies there. And then we go down the line of email marketing for her digital products, how she lays out her welcome campaigns and nurtures her essentially leads through her email list to buy her digital products. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Well, welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Kerry Campion. Welcome, Kerry.
Hi, welcome. Welcome to you. Thank you for welcoming me. That's what I wanted to say.
Well, you came highly recommended by a previous two-time guest, Jared Krause. So we had to bring you on here to share some of your knowledge. But for anyone who maybe hasn't found you on the internet yet and is not familiar with who you are, do you want to maybe give a brief background?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a content marketer and SEO copywriter over at God Save the Surf. That's my business. So I work with SaaS brands in particular who are fueling the creator economy. I like to call them creator tech brands, which is a term I have made up. So yeah, my gig is essentially creating customer-centric content marketing plans and writing SEO copy that sounds nothing like SEO copy.
Short and sweet, I like it. So I want to start with the first thing. You wrote a blog on this recently, and I think it would be nice to kind of dive into it, and that is the idea of content writing, and I'm assuming that means SEO content writing versus copywriting, and mm-hmm. what you see is the differences there and how they kind of distinguish themselves.
Yeah. So, I mean, traditionally, and this is what you'll hear 9.9 times out of 10, which is copywriting is for conversions and content writing is for education or inspiring. But those lines can actually be quite blurry. So, I mean, one example, let's take blogs. So they're traditionally content, right? It's primarily to educate, inspire, generate social shares, go viral, all that kind of stuff. It's not usually associated with making a direct sale. But I mean, one blog that I wrote for a client generated at least 41 leads for her like $2,000 program. And that was like just wow. In like the comments section of that blog. I mean, we don't know. We haven't really attributed like, well, who clicked the link and then signed up for the waitlist page through that. We haven't really, you know, dug into those analytics. But like just from the comment section was 41 people like, oh, I'm interested, send me more info. So, you know, the lines between that can become blurred. So, I mean, generally speaking, yeah, content is for education, for inspiring, for going viral. Copywriting is much more involved in making a sale. But yeah, it's definitely blurry. Even like within copywriting, isn't just about conversions either. Take for instance, slogans, brand voice, things like that. So one of the things that we do is usually before we work with a client on website copy, if they don't kind of have like a documented brand voice guide, usually that's something that we recommend for them. Because it's things like your values, your USP, your value prop, your values, et cetera, and how you speak and how you communicate, what makes you different. It's a very important piece of your marketing, right? Because it's differentiating you in a market that's 9 times out of 10, very crowded, very noisy. And that's not exactly conversion copywriting. You know, people don't get a brand voice guide and they're like, okay, yeah, this is gonna give me a ton of money, right? Or like, imagine McDonald's without I'm loving it, or Apple without think different. You know, like that's copywriting, but it's not exactly conversion copywriting. So yeah, there's overlap, I think, between the two. And I think the traditional division isn't really that helpful. I kind of think of them as related. So I kind of see it as content writers kind of build the relationship and trusts with your prospects, and copywriters then, you know, take that BS usually and then help them make the transition from prospect to customer.
I like this idea you mentioned of your brand voice. Excuse me. And I guess, do you have any examples? I want to put you on the spot here, on the top of your head, of maybe almost two polar opposite brand voices, that just so someone could get an idea of what that kind of looks like. Maybe two companies that share, yeah, completely different voices.
Yeah. I was like, oh crap, come up with an example on the spot. Very quickly. Apple and Microsoft. Very, very different brand voices, very different positioning, you know, with even and when we kind of look at brand archetypes. Have you ever heard of that concept before?
No, I haven't.
So there's this like really cool book, I even forget what it's called, but it's basically like these 12 brand archetypes, and it's essentially like a type of character that your business sort of embodies. And Apple would be like the kind of the bandit, the outlaw, the kind of, you know, we're the underdog, even though they are very, very not. But that's like, you know, we go back to like the traditional Apple, like the 1985 ad where they're like rebelling against what's Microsoft. And then Microsoft are very much like the rulers. So very much like order. We want to like dominate this market. We are the big guys. We are the professionals. And Apple was kind of like the scrappy, creative, think different. We're not boring like those guys. So yeah, those would be like two brands that have very different, not just brand archetypes, but very different brand voices as well. One speaks to the creatives. One speaks to very much a more traditional corporate kind of audience.
Yeah, I want to dive into maybe how you can develop your own brand voice. I have a couple of my own brands that I feel like I kind of have a distinct voice, but maybe not to that extent. The audience listening to this, I guess, niche website builders, they run affiliate sites, display ad monetization, affiliate marketing. And obviously within the space, you can get a lot of bland content, kind of just repeating whatever's on the first page of Google, laying out the facts as they are, that's it. So I guess for someone who maybe has a website in the space, how can they go about developing their own brand voice that's unique, that should hopefully make them stand out from whatever else is out there?
Yeah, so actually you touched on a really great point there, because especially with the onset of AI generated copy, because people don't really use AI writers as they're supposed to, which is not to like just verbatim copy and paste, stick it on your website, right? It's meant to be an assistant. But because of the onset of that, exactly what you're saying, we're getting an onslaught of just this beige content. Everything sounds the same. No one is differentiated in any which way. And so it might get you traffic, but that might be it. You know, there might not be anything else going on there. Generally speaking, we want conversions. We want to build some type of brand. So for me, really when it comes to your brand voice, it really starts with your values and what your audience wants. So I always say, like, before you write a piece of content, you have to ask yourself, what is my argument here? So it's kind of like almost going back to like uni or in school, where you couldn't just like, okay, here's 5 tips on the American Civil War. Here's 5 facts about the American Civil War. You had to develop some sort of argument and some sort of point, and then use evidence to support that, right? So I always say, when you're writing content, what is your argument here? Why does this need to exist? And why do you know it to be true? Or why do you believe that it's true? Because that really comes back to your own experience, which is really what's lacking on the first page of Google in many, many instances. And it's even something that's been picked up in the one of the many updates this year from Google, the helpful content update. You know, one thing that they're saying, especially with which I think is kind of more of an attack on affiliate sites actually, is they want to prioritize first-hand experience. So like your first-hand experience with a product or with some sort of subject. So yeah, really when you're developing your brand voice, you're really thinking about like, well, why are you writing about this? Why do you think that's true? Why do you believe that? So that's a really good place to start. And second of all is to do what we call voice of customer research in copywriting, which is literally talking to your audience. It's interviewing people, it's sending out surveys, it's finding their kind of pain points, their goals, their objections or hesitations, and kind of like leveraging that in your own copy and your own content, like almost using your own words back to them. So that's extremely important to kind of have that Venn diagram, you know, where it's like your voice and your values, like what they want, and to make it as much of a circle as possible. So yeah, that's a really good place to start. And so we usually have one of the copywriters who works with us, she works on the brand voice guides a lot. We recently did an Instagram live about it. And she was saying one thing she loves asking people when she's developing these brand voice guides for our clients is like, what makes you really angry about like your industry? Like what, you know, what's out there that like really pisses you off that you don't like? And that's where you get like the real fire that people like why they're really in business. And that's also a really great thing. Like everyone loves a bit of a rebel, you know, and likes to kind of stand for something. And that can be a really important way to develop your own voice.
Nice. I really like the idea of that personal experience and personal touch when writing. Mm-hmm. I know I do that a lot. I have, I don't know, a very not supported theory at all, but using words like, in my opinion, in my experience, I prefer... Yes, you know, things like that.
I'm pretty sure.
Like for me, I think that stuff does really well because it kind of comfort or infers that you know something about the topic, or you've used the product, or you know something about what's happening, not just writing this product does this or whatever the topic is does this, but you don't really have an opinion on what, you know, anything that's going on.
Yeah. And even like, you know, especially I was thinking of like, you know, affiliate sites and things like that, even things like original photos, like not just be like using the stock photo that's been used 500,000 times in a bunch of other affiliate sites, like actually take your own photos and your own videos and things like that. Because I just know whenever I land on content, when it's just kind of like general advice with no context or no argument or no opinion, I'm just way more likely to not engage or, you know, not... like sign up to the email list or engage in any other way, you know?
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that fully. Like, yeah, I don't even bother reading a lot of the stuff that I come across now, especially if I'm doing my keyword research, you see a lot of that already, and it makes it easier for me as a content creator, because I know I can take a stance, you know, for or against. Often it's against whatever's on there, because whatever's on the front page is usually either wrong or just complete shit. So it becomes a little easier. But I wanted to come to your content creating process as well. You obviously mentioned about you wrote an article for a client that generated a bunch of comment leads on there. So what was your process for, I guess, developing that piece of content?
Oh God. So this was like 2 years ago, that particular piece of content.
So in general then.
So yeah, my process has developed a lot since then. It's almost like especially because I tend to work with clients over the long term, and we just keep like, okay, improving the process and changing little things and tweaking it. So now essentially my content process is kind of like a month by month process. So I don't just dive in to content production. So usually what we do is we spend the first month in what I like to call information mining mode. So that's where I'm doing things, like I mentioned earlier, those voice of customer interviews. So we're setting up customer interviews, client interviews. I'm trying to find out like what was going on in their life whenever they discovered this product. What were they looking for? What's their day-to-day look like? What kind of people are they? What do they do? All this sort of stuff. I also conduct like team interviews. So for instance, if someone's working in sales, like, and they have a lot of direct like time with customers and things, I want to, you know, talk with them. And then just understanding things like the core business goals, setting like our KPIs and things like that. Just kind of getting like a feel with what you actually want to do with your content. What is this for? Because I think a lot of businesses just get into the, oh, we just need to produce content and drive traffic and that's it. But they don't really dig into anything else. And then it becomes hard to measure whether or not it's really successful if you don't kind of set those goals to begin with. And then when it comes to actually like building out the strategy, that's kind of like the second month, more or less. We do our competitor research. So yeah, a lot of seeing what's working on other sites, things like, okay, well, which content's generating a lot of backlinks in this niche? What's ranking really well? Why? Where are they getting backlinks from? What type of topics are they covering, etc. They usually audit their current assets, because a lot of people just kind of think it's just producing new content all the time, just push out content. They don't realize they're actually sitting on great content already that might just need, you know, a bit of tweaking, and it might just, that might be enough to help it reach, you know, the first page of Google. Then our keyword research, building out topic clusters, and then creating a content marketing calendar. So essentially, like, I kind of spent like 2 months really in that mode of like, okay, we need to get organized. We need to understand what we're doing. We need to understand who we're writing for. Because if not, I've just found further down the line, you just need to keep changing directions, and then there's no SOP. Mm. So there's a clog in production, and it just becomes a mess. So it's better just do those things first. And then when it really comes to the actual production, so kind of depends what domain I'm working on. So generally speaking, I like to target those bottom of funnel keywords first, just because they tend to be higher conversion rate, and that's kind of what my clients are, you know, after. They're kind of like, okay, we want to drive more leads, so we're really going after those bottom of funnel keywords first. And also, if they don't have a lot of domain authority as well, one thing I like to kind of focus on is content that sort of generates links. Because link building, as I'm sure you know, is an agonizing process, and it's usually like spammy outreach, like, hey, I wrote a post like your post, you want to link to my post? It's just like so forced and terrible. So I like to try to, you know, produce content assets that kind of generate links. To give like some examples of that, if you're familiar with like Sales Hackers, for instance, one of the articles that they have that has, I think, the most links on their site is literally just like a curated list of the best sales tools. So it's like divided by, you know, subcategory, a kind of BS marketing sales tool, boom, and it goes like that for like 150 tools. Generates a ton of backlinks, those sort of things. Statistics articles, like one of the ones that has the most backlinks in HubSpot is their marketing statistics. I think it comes, they update it every year, I think. People love linking to statistics because it's confirming, like they're trying to prove a point. So they're literally searching for like blogging statistics. Okay, look, yeah, blogging will increase your ROI by blah, 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 because that's any kind of templates as well, like ConvertKit, one of their biggest articles or, well, pages that generates a lot of links is email sign-up forms. And a really weird one, history of articles. So this is a really, like, one you would not expect.
That works for me. That works for me too.
Yeah. I was looking up one a while ago. It was like history of search engines. And there's one guy's site. He has like 5,000 backlinks to that article. and the entire site has 7,000. Majority of them that one article, and it's so weird. Like when I bring it up to my clients, they're like, "Huh? We're gonna history of business intelligence? Like what?" You know, there's a lot of resistance, but they just generate backlinks. So yeah, generally when I'm working with a domain, like a lower authority, I want to go after those, you know, probably low volume, but maybe like high conversion intent keywords and the links as well. That's generally the ones that are kind of, if I was like to prioritize with like a lower domain, I usually go for those first.
Yeah, I guess the question becomes then, if you're writing, say, link bait content or whatever you want to call it, one, I guess, I wonder how many of the stats that people post are just made up, because I don't know, a lot of people that already have maybe stats within their niche. And two, if you are a lower authority, so for example, HubSpot has their most link page, but they have such a high domain authority, they probably rank well on the service for that when they publish that page, and then they just start naturally getting links because they are an authority. But for someone who has maybe a newer site, how would you then get the links to your page, as it might not be ranking on the first page to get links?
Yeah, I mean, again, it would probably be trying to align that kind of link bait content with a lower competition, lower search volume. Like, I mean, there's ones like history of web design and things like that, like super, you know, low competition there. And also a lot of the things, like you said, a lot of people, like HubSpot can have these articles like statistics because they have a huge audience that they can essentially survey and get all that data from, or pay, you know, some company to do it and get the data. For smaller sites, what you can kind of do is you can leverage influencers. So even if you have like a survey and you can kind of like, okay, you can sort of pay to have that in like a newsletter, things like that, generated from there. Or even if you use things like Google Scholar and you're actually like kind of interpreting original data, you know, rather than sort of generating it, again, that kind of comes back to that idea of you're actually doing on things, you're not just like, well, McKinsey says blah, 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 just like linking out to some random thing. You're actually kind of seeing original data and then making it digestible for people like in your niche who would be interested in those types of stats.
Gotcha. I know one of your other, I guess, content pillars is us articles for social shares, which I find interesting, because I guess you have sites that are built purely on the idea of posting stuff on Facebook to get traffic just to make money from ads. But I guess what makes an article worthy or have the potential to go viral and get social shares?
Yeah, I mean, whenever I think of it, I mean, I don't really think of it so much as viral content, even though like, yeah, viral content generally is the one that has like a ton of social shares. But for me, whenever I sort of think of content that generates social shares, I'm thinking as well of leveraging other people's audiences. So those types of, you know, kind of, you're almost borrowing other people's authority. So for instance, if you have an article saying you're sourcing quotes, you know, and you start reaching out to people in that niche, you might have like a bigger audience than you do, and asking them to contribute, you know, quotes and things like that for their article, you link back to their site, etc. Then whenever it's published, you reach out to them, you say like, hey, you know, the article's published, would really appreciate if you share it with your audience. They share it with their audience who's, you know, bigger than your audience is more likely to share it because that's from a source that they know and that they trust. So for me, when it comes to that sort of social share content, for me, it's really about how can I sort of leverage other people's audiences within my own content?
Gotcha. So then would publishing content to post on your own social media to get social media traffic be a strategy within that? Or is it just purely you're looking to collab with bigger social brands to bring essentially cross-pollinate traffic?
Yeah, for me, it's mostly kind of cross-pollinating traffic. But of course, like, I mean, I always leverage like my own social channels, or that's, you know, my Instagram, which is something that I probably spend. Instagram and Twitter would be the ones I probably spend the most time on. LinkedIn just eats away at my soul. I haven't quite been able to get into that too much. But I find like if you can get into Twitter is one of like the best channels for for driving traffic to my site. Like, I can't remember, it was lately, but like 20% of my traffic was from Twitter.
Oh, wow.
And of all my traffic sources, it had the lowest bounce rate. So Twitter as well tends to be, for me, generally speaking, better than, well, I don't really use Facebook that like at all. I was going to say that much. I don't use Facebook at all. But compared with Instagram, definitely Twitter, I find drives a lot more traffic. And then with my own email list, just always be growing your email list, no matter what. It's such an engaged little segment of your audience that, yeah, you really can't afford to not be on like growing your email list.
So how are you leveraging Twitter then? Are you on Twitter as yourself or as your brand? And when you're posting, are you just posting the article or are you actually kind of writing something engaging and getting people to click on things?
Yeah, so I am on Twitter as myself. My Twitter predates my brand. And I'm quite glad of that, actually, because I think that helps a lot. I think Twitter is really great for kind of personal branding. So kind of like having, you know, if you've got like a face to your brand, essentially. For me, Twitter's been just, I only really started even leveraging it about this year. So I didn't really use it that much before. Started leveraging it a lot this year. When it comes to kind of distributing or repurposing content on Twitter, I tend to, well, share the article, yeah. I tend to have in my articles, if you have WordPress, a nice little plugin is Ultimate Blocks. And with that, you can do like little click to tweet sort of thing. I try to make that like as kind of like clickbaity as possible. So people are not like tempted to share it. Just so, like whenever they're in the article, if they want to share it, they can, you know, share that out. But generally speaking, when people sort of share their content, they just tend to like share the article maybe 2 or 3 times in like a tweet and don't change anything and just boom, put it out there. But usually what I do is I'll write a thread about a topic that I've covered in the post, and then I'll, you know, link it, maybe the article like in the, like the last tweet. There is kind of some debate about whether or not you should do that, because sometimes with links, it reduces your reach. I can't really speak to that. For me, it's been fine. But yeah, repurposing content to Twitter, for me, it's really about finding the most interesting sound bites from your content, and not just like copying and pasting things you might find there. You know, maybe you do have like a nice sound bite, but really kind of thinking, well, what point am I making in this paragraph? What's my argument here? Turning those into tweets. And the little threads, and then just kind of repurposing and redistributing that way.
Gotcha. You also mentioned Instagram's good for you, but so for me, Instagram sucks the soul out of me. I absolutely hate. I hate Instagram. I hate TikTok. I hate all of those things. I've recently started post, because I have my own podcast as well for my site, and I recently started posting like 9x16, whatever it is, the story. Block version of just cut videos and putting on Instagram Reels, TikTok and all that stuff. But obviously, like, Instagram is just the, I cannot stand how much they throttle your reach for anything.
It's dreadful. Like, it is so bad, like, especially compared to Twitter, where it's like, I feel like every day I get 5 new followers and I've done nothing. You know? On Instagram, it's like, for every 2 followers I get, I lose one. You know, it's just
Yeah, exactly. So how are you leveraging Instagram then? Because you can't do what you do on Twitter on Instagram. And obviously you cannot put links in your, it's just a pain in the ass. Your only link you have is in your bio, all that kind of stuff. So is there a way that you've kind of find to hack Instagram for your website?
For driving traffic, I mean, it's like I said, it's nothing compared to Twitter. It's definitely less. So I just focus on repurposing the value from my posts into Instagram posts. So I've gone all in video now. I'm on the Reels. Got a video editor because I'm like, don't want to deal with that. So essentially, I will take out concepts that are like in the post, and I'll just turn them into its own content asset. And that's just kind of how I treat it. I'm like, Instagram is not the platform that's going to drive a ton of traffic to my site. I've just accepted that. So what I'm going to do is just use it to nurture relationships, to provide value in within the walls of Instagram, essentially, like just accept that that's what it is. I make my peace with it. And having said that, like, I still get, you know, especially now because they've they allow you to include links and stories. So so I have seen traffic coming because it actually says Instagram story, like on my Google Analytics. So I have seen like people kind of click through there and stuff. So yeah, I mean, I just really just try to repurpose it into like its own content asset, its own little mini asset from the article. And then I always mention the article in it, like in the caption and my stories. I'm still trying to like drive people there.
Yeah.
But I have kind of made my peace with the fact that it's just not the best platform for it. Nothing compared to Twitter or my email list as well. My email list definitely is, I think generally it performs better than Twitter. It's kind of like my email list, Twitter, and then Instagram.
Gotcha. I guess how much, for someone listening, if they want to maybe jump on, start to share on social media, how much extra time does it take you to repurpose content?
Oh my God, Twitter? So long. I'm not messing. Like it is not easy. It is not. People kind of say, repurpose your content. You write a blog and then you've got 30 tweets and then you've got, and they make it sound so easy, but it's not, it's not. You will need help or you'll go insane. Like, that's why I hired a video editor. Cause I was like, I just can't do this. I have like a little video editing software. I could have done it myself, but it was taking me so much time. I mean, I'm quite good at tracking my time. And I think from, cause I mean, just one article takes me about 5-6 hours, maybe kind of depending on the length and if there's other people involved or something like that. But that's just the article, right? If I want to publish one of those a week, I mean, that's already a lot. And then on Instagram, it's like creating the graphics because you get the wee templates and you're like, oh, yeah, this is good. I'll just add my colors. And you're like, oh, this looks crap. I don't know what I did. And if it's a feed post, like you said, the reach is completely throttled. It's just it's not going anywhere. So really, you have to do reels. You have to dance monkey dance. that's what they're pushing. And that's just like, OK, so I mean, I send my video editor 12 pieces of raw footage. So this is 12 1-minute videos. Keep that in mind. And another day, it took me an hour and a half to record them. 12 1-minute videos. Because I had to, you know, because I want to have it like with my proper camera and stuff, just so the quality is a bit better. So to set that up, get the lighting right, you know, and if you're vertically, and that causes all sorts of havoc. If you're using like a DSLR camera, I'm like, everything's upside down. What's wrong? And so even just recording them, like those 12 1-minute videos took me like, so long. And then it's the captions and it's scheduling it to a platform like later. I don't know exactly how long it takes me, but content repurposing and distribution, which is something different, it takes a ton of effort. It's a lot of effort. And I don't want people to think like, oh yeah, I'll just do this, it's fine. Like, you'll need help at some point or you'll go mad.
So I guess for people starting on their blogs or who aren't generating much traffic yet, maybe not to waste their time doing that just yet and maybe focus on, I guess, developing their blog content or whatever it is that they're focusing on. But I think that was one of your other content pillars was creating SEO content, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
So do you want to dive into a little bit of that process? I know you kind of touched on it a bit previously, but maybe even just kind of dive in how you like to structure your articles for SEO.
So the actual articles themselves or like the plan, like the sort of content plan?
We can go into both if you like.
Okay. So the content plan, what I generally do, I'm not very good at doing this for myself, but shoemaker's kid never has any shoes and all that. But I generally start with topic clusters. So I mean, to give you an example, one of my clients is in revenue operations. So the three main topics that we talk about is sales operations, marketing operations, and business intelligence. So I'm like, okay, these are the three topics that we talk about. For each of these topics, we have what's known as a cornerstone piece of content. And then we have like related articles in that niche. that's related to that cornerstone piece of content. So those related articles, like I said, that's going to be something like maybe something for link building, something that'll hopefully help us drive email signups, like things that are really related to our lead magnet and things like that. Articles that we can bring in collaborators on, try and get, you know, them sharing the article with their audience and things like that. So that's generally where we start. And within there, I try to identify, you know, our bottom of funnel content. So things like one of them is like a hiring guide for like a marketing operations consultant. So yeah, someone's searching that. I should hope they're interested in hiring a marketing office consultant. And then kind of like more top of funnel, what is revenue operations? What is this thing? And, you know, and then our middle of funnel content, which is kind of more, it's kind of content that we use for like troubleshooting. So people are having a problem in Salesforce and they're like, oh, how do I fix duplicate leads in Salesforce? We've got content on that. And, you know, so generally speaking within each cluster, that's sort of what we do.
Gotcha. How, I guess within that cluster, I'm assuming you're internally linking from how strict are you in that? Are you only internally linking within that one little topic cluster, or are you kind of going wherever it's relevant?
I go wherever it's relevant, but within each topic cluster, because sometimes I'm doing the strategy, but we're working with other writers. And even if I'm doing the writing as well, like I build out a brief for each article. So usually with that, there's what we're doing now is having interviews with the subject matter experts. So either my client or someone on their team who's, you know, knows a lot about the topic that we're writing on. So that the writer knows exactly like, okay, they know how to add their opinion and their unique perspective into the article, et cetera. And as part of that brief, we actually do have like linking opportunities. So we want you to link to these articles. If you can find more, then great, but make sure at least, you know, we're covering these. And usually like if the writer's, you know, writing something and suddenly they're like, oh, this is a relevant link as well to another article that we have, I'm going to link to that, then that's fine too.
I want to know how you do your briefs, how detailed they are, and kind of what goes in them and kind of how you set them out.
Yeah, so they've developed a lot, because at first I was kind of like, I don't want to impinge too much on the creativity of the writer, and you know.
That's me.
Exactly. I was like, I don't want a brief to be long, you know. Yeah. So I thought, well, what's the best balance? So I'm like, what I want to provide the writer with is the resources that they need, rather than dictating every word they need to say. I'm like, here is the resources that you will need, because I know as a writer, one thing that takes up a huge amount of my time, much more than writing, is the research, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're not in that niche like the client is, you sometimes might not know if something is a reliable source of information or not, or, you know. So that's why I've started doing, okay, we have an interview with the subject matter expert, or I'm asking questions, you know, like, I don't know, take that one. How to fix duplicate leads in Salesforce. Well, why is this such a problem for people? If they don't fix it, what are the consequences? And, you know, questions like that. So then the writer can, then we have a transcript for that as well. So they don't have to like sit and actually listen to it. They have a transcript so they can kind of like, you know, speed read it or whatever. So they basically have like the context, the unique perspective. And then we just have like things like the kind of purpose of the article. You know, for instance, we have one about defining business intelligence KPIs. And I was like, we really want to be strict on it. It's about defining them. It's not about measuring them. It's not about, you know, I don't want to blow the article out of scope. So we're just really focusing on defining them and the consequences of not defining them. Word count, which generally speaking, they don't really need because they have, you know, agreed with the client how much they're going to write anyway. But generally speaking, the word count. And then our headers. So our subheads. But I don't really, like, I mean, I'll have like a line or two after that, just kind of outlining what to write about. But I don't want that to turn into, this is exactly how I want you to write this article. So it's like, oh yeah, mention here, blah, 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 you know. And then we have some of our LSI keywords. So it's kind of like, if you can mention these, you know, these kind of topics naturally, which they should be able to do anyway, because the things that we've used, it happens quite naturally. But just like in the editing process, if you see like you can kind of mention a topic in one of these LSI keywords, well then great. And then resources as well outside of the subject matter expert interview. So yeah, like, okay, so this is a really great blog post about this. This is a really great YouTube video that outlines this. This is a good podcast interview about X, you know, just kind of resources that have kind of been approved. And so that they don't need to like do all the digging and like Google and, you know, go down the rabbit hole. And then the links to include. Yeah, I think that's it.
So are you doing like a subject matter interview for every article?
It kind of, if there's overlap between some of the articles, no. Like usually it'd be like a kind of broad topic, you know, and then from that one, we can kind of do various articles, you know, so it might be something like the business intelligence KPIs, but we also have, you know, articles about measuring them, and that's also within the same interview. So yeah, we tend to get like a few articles from one interview.
And then where are you pulling your headings from? It sounds like you're actually pulling some headings from the actual interview questions then.
So usually I start pulling headings and things like that from Phrase. So Phrase.io, that's Phrase.io, is generally what I'll use to kind of like start, you know, building out those subheads. And the LSI keywords, the kind of related topics as well, usually go to Phrase for those.
Are you going back into Phrase then once the content's finished? Are you looking to optimize through that program?
That I haven't done yet, to be honest, just kind of for like a resource and time sort of thing. Generally, if I'm writing content, I will run it through Phrase a second time. But generally speaking, I'm just like, okay, like if it's a good piece of content, everyone's happy with it, I'm like, that's good enough for us. But then if, say, like after 8 weeks or so, maybe it's not ranking as well, and we think, well, maybe we can, you know, re-optimize it a little bit more, then that might be when we, you know, kind of run it through Phrase and see if we can identify any topical gaps that maybe we didn't really cover that other competitors are covering.
Gotcha. And I guess because you're doing this for companies, how are you deciding what you're writing versus what you're outsourcing to writers?
So generally speaking, it's just budget.
So
it's kind of, I sort of have like three tiers for my services. So one is like, you know, you hire me for like just the content marketing. So it's really, I'm kind of coming up with the strategy. And then afterwards, I'm kind of the one who handles like repurposing, you know, coming up with concepts for, say, LinkedIn articles or LinkedIn posts or Twitter and things like that. Redistribution, re-optimization, if we see something that's maybe not doing too well. Then there's like where I'm writing as well, just like the content. So that would be like, okay, I'm doing the strategy and I'm doing the writing. And then there's like the final package, which is like content marketer and full stack copywriter. So it's basically like, usually when people are like, okay, we also need a website and we need a landing page and we need this email thing. And, you know? So generally they need like a lot of copy. Generally speaking, we'd only do that for like a couple of months or something until we kind of get the copy together that they need. But yeah, so it kind of comes down to budget, or maybe even some clients are working with a content writer that they love, but they just need someone to come in with the strategy.
Gotcha. And I know your last pillar is sales, or bottom of the funnel content, I think is your last content pillar, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I wanted to touch on with that. How are you writing, I guess the more like kind of like, you could, for affiliate marketing and display people, it would be product reviews, roundups, things like that. So how are you writing yours to essentially assist the person reading to continue on with the sale? Is there anything in there that might be unique to think that what you're doing, or maybe this call to actions that you like to use, or a structure that you find that works well?
I mean, generally speaking, for my own sort of bottom of funnel content might be things like, I mean, for my own site would be best SEO copywriting courses. For instance, I have a course on SEO copywriting. And thankfully that was not a very competitive keyword. So jumped on that. Really to take them to the next level. I mean, I don't have anything kind of in particular there. What I tend to do though is I tend to use sort of email campaigns a lot to kind of nurture people, especially because a lot of the stuff that I work with, it's higher ticket. You know, and very rarely is someone going to go from a course, best SEO copywriting courses, to dropping like 800 quid on a course. It's just not a very, it has happened once, I nearly died, but generally speaking, it doesn't really happen. There's kind of more nurturing, even if they are quite at the bottom of that funnel. So what I just tend to do is I tend to just create, like, I just try to drive everyone to the email list as much as possible. So like even with my own course, which is closed at the minute, I moved into like a closed launch thing. I kind of drive people to that page. Our sales page is like converts well, and I get compliments on it quite a lot. So that tends to, you know, just drive those wait lists and things like that. But generally speaking, I mean, the things that I would work on are a bit more high ticket. So it does require that, get them on the email list. Again, for me, it's the money. The money is in the list. And those drip campaigns, nurture campaigns, really, that's really where I would kind of come in with that.
Do you want to break down your drip or nurture campaign there and kind of how you structured, I guess, your emails from day to day? So as day one, maybe like a welcome email, day two is maybe more about you or something like that, and kind of how that looks.
Yeah, so it depends. Well, I have a few. So for the one for my own, when I had, because my course used to be like evergreen, it was always open. My main lead magnet for that, and for all my list almost, is my free keyword research course. So it's like a 5-day course. It's a 5-day course, and it's dripped out one email a day with one lesson. And basically, like, the value prop there is teaching people how to do keyword research without Ahrefs or SEMrush, because you know, most copywriters, they just need to do keyword research. They don't need like $120 a month expense to do that, right? So it's very appealing. So the reason I did it this way, which was delivering a course over email over 5 days, was actually to train people to open them, so that it helps my deliverability right out the gate, because people are getting that, you know, email, they've signed up literally for an email series, so they're more likely to open it each day, and open rates and stuff are good for it. So yeah, I dropped that out for 5 days. Then what happened was there was a bonus lesson. So it kind of like split the funnel. There was what they basically, all they had to do was tell me if they were a copywriter or an online business owner. So I have one course, like, for content marketing for kind of everyone, and the specific SEO copywriting course for copywriters. So they clicked that, they got the bonus lesson, and then that set off two different drip campaigns that I set up through, oh my God, what do you call it? It's super famous. What is it called?
The email marketing platform?
Deadline funnel.
Deadline funnel, yep.
Deadline funnel. I was like, used it for months. So that set off two different funnels. That was a, you know, limited offer. It was like a, I think it was a 3-day offer I went for.
Interesting.
Three-day offer, I think it was. I'm trying to remember, like, the exact kind of sequence. But, you know, with one was, you know, building the authority. So, you know, not just the first one was obviously introducing the fact that this was a continuation of the kind of course that they had just done, more in depth, more support, et cetera, all the things that, you know, people have said that they wanted and needed. Then there was one about, you know, kind of testimonials, people who, you know, it was kind of like sharing results and things like that. And I can't for the life of me remember the last email. But I think it was something along the lines of, you know, if you don't do nothing, nothing changes type thing, you know, like, just go away and, you know, just live your life and that's fine. I kind of like the final emails of any kind of sales sequence to be like super bare bones, like, not like that, you have 5 minutes left to buy, oh my God, are you an idiot? I like to be like the super chill, and that's kind of like our sign off. And that did pretty well. I mean, I've got like a pretty small audience right now. My email list is only at like, I think 420 or something. Even when that email list was on like, you know, 200 around there. I was getting like maybe one sale a month, you know, for a course that was like 800.
Damn, that's good.
Yeah, I know. I was super proud. So yeah, did well. But I decided to get off at Evergreen and move to like a launch method. Mm. But yeah, that was what I used for that. Then I have one for which I'm revamping because I need to change my portfolio. Lots of updates need to be made. But it was people downloading my portfolio. I can actually jump. I want to actually jump into ConvertKit and see if I can kind of remember what was on there. But yeah, that was essentially like, that was much more like you kind of said, like introducing myself and, you know, what your project looks like and those types of things. And that also generated like a fair amount of inquiries and things like that. Download a portfolio. There we go. Yeah. So I kind of set like the stage as well, because everyone kind of dreads whenever they download something like a portfolio, because it's like, oh, I'm going to be marked as like hot lead or something. And oh my God. And so I literally just addressed that. I was like, the robots told me that you want to check out my portfolio. So you'll find the link to download it at the bottom of this email. Now you're probably wondering, is this bitch going to annoy me with endless emails? So basically I set the stage. I'm like, you're going to hear from me over 4 days, and then like you'll be on my newsletter. You'll hear from me once a month, and you can go wherever you want, you know.
Nice.
And then I did my one, which is like their first name, and then S. So like, you know, David's copywriting project, and yeah. Then I outlined exactly what it was like to work with me. Then I have one which is what burns when you set fire to your farts. That is the subject line, because it's about like kind of debunking some myths. Like everyone thinks, oh God, if I hire an SEO copywriter, my website's going to sound terrible. It's going to be all these clunky keywords and it's going to be so crap. So yeah. I was like debunking myth. The myth being that it is not methane that burns when you set fire to your farts. It's a different chemical.
I'm glad people were able to find that out on this podcast.
Come to me for all sorts of weird facts. And then the last one was, you don't have to go home. And then it says the next line, but you can't stay here. And I'm like, you know, that's it. That's me. If you want to work with me again, like the kind of anti-pressure final email.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are like my drip campaigns. I know people have a lot of success with, they do like a one-time offer, which is like,
yeah,
you know,
that's what I'm
day.
Doing.
Yeah.
Now mine's 30 minutes, 15 to 30 minutes. I want people to buy now.
I've never done like a kind of offer like that quick before. Because I mean, yeah, I understand like my course is a bigger investment. So yeah. I was like, I want to be fair to people and let them think it through and let them sit on it for a while. And like I said, it did convert well. So really, yeah, those were the sort of ones that I tend to use. But any type of service-based businesses, we always like identify the problem, like what led them to this email list, what lead magnet, okay, how can we help them solve that problem? Authority, case studies, results, how to move forward, and then they just tend to move into like the any kind of like just normal nurture, newsletter, things like that.
How come you move from an evergreen course to a launch mode?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked, because I've talked about this a lot. So literally, it was more expensive for me to run an evergreen course than do like a live launch.
Okay.
Because what was it? I cut something like $1,600 a year from my expenses by moving to a live launch method. And I was like, I mean, I could have maybe made up the money just with like sales, but I was just like, oh, I'm just like, it's a lot of money. I have to do like the deadline funnel. And then to make deadline funnel work on my Podia website, I had to go to the Earthquaker plan to implement third party code on the pages. I know. I was devastated about that. Because that was the only thing I needed on the Earthquaker plan. And I was like, oh no. And then there were a few other expenses associated with it that I just thought, oh no. And then, so yeah, the expenses was one. And then it became about actually me promoting it. Because it was on Evergreen, I just got kind of lazy. Like, doing any other type of promotion. I was just sort of like, oh, well, people will join and then it'll be in the back end and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, like, I don't have a huge email list. I don't spend a lot of time on, like, my own SEO and my own site, which probably isn't that surprising. But, you know, so it's like, I just, you know, I'm not spending any effort promoting it. Whereas I think if I had a launch date where it's open cart, close cart, I'm going to put a lot more effort into things like audience building and, you know, producing more content for that specific part of my audience. And actually, that's turning out to be true. I'm doing a lot more audience building now than what I was doing before. So yeah, it was just kind of like a mixture. And as well, I sort of think like there was the offer, there was like the, you know, the deadline funnel that was like €100 off or something. But I was kind of like, but if they change their mind, it's still there. You know, it's like, oh, well, okay, well, maybe I'll see at the end of the month. Okay, it'll be €100 more expensive, but well. And sometimes it's like people need that open and close date to sort of take action on some things. So yeah, it was kind of a mixture of those three things.
Have you seen any changes in sales with the two different models?
I haven't done the live launch yet. So I will come back to you with that one. I'll be with the case study. So yeah, I won't be launching it again until 2023, just because I'm changing a lot of it on the back end. I'm basically making it a kind of, there's a fancy term they're using it now, kind of community something course, where it's basically like, I'm essentially taking the big course, bringing it up into mini courses and making those available for people, like, because a lot of them were like, oh, I have gaps to fill in my SEO knowledge. And I kind of give them like the A to Z of everything they ever could possibly know. And I'm like, that doesn't really align with filling gaps. They might just need like the keyword module or the, you know, how do I build that brief? Because they're asking me for that. And I want to make it a bit more easy for them to do that. So I have to kind of redesign it. And then I thought, if I do it in 2022, that leaves Black Friday, which I don't know if I've got anything to do on Black Friday. And then I'm competing with Christmas. So I was like, no, I don't think it's feasible.
No, fair enough. Now, I think I've asked you pretty much every question I wanted on this podcast, but if anyone wants to follow you, find you on Twitter or any other social platform or website, where can they find you?
Yeah, so my website is godsavethesurp.com. So that's S-E-R-P. Twitter is K-C de Santiago. So yeah, I have two last names. So I'm Kerry Campion de Santiago. So it's K-C de Santiago. Or yeah, if you just search Kerry Campion, like, I'm like the only one in the world. So you will find me.
No, perfect. I'll throw those links down in the description too for anyone who wants to follow you. But other than that, thanks for coming on and sharing your knowledge on SEO and copywriting.
Thank you. And I would like again to welcome you to your own show.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.